Hello and welcome to the Once Driven, Forever Smitten podcast, part three. I'm Dougie Rankin and I'm joined by...
Pete Sell, how are you doing?
Hello, Singapore correspondent. Yeah, I'm all right, thanks very much. It is the middle of January. We're nearly through the worst month of the year and it's been relatively productive, which I'm quite pleased about. We're getting somewhere with a few cars and things and getting quite a bit of content out there. How's yourself? What's the weather like in Singapore at the moment?
You don't want to know because it's mid-January, so yeah, it's been pretty warm. It's about 30 degrees today, so it's technically rainy season, but I mean they should come to England and work out what rainy season's like, so it's not that bad at all. But yeah, well, it's good. It's been right.
You did send me a video last week of you water skiing or something.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. So there's got to be some upsides to not messing around with old voxels, right? So that was January's activity. But you've had a pretty busy week. You've had a busy couple of months actually on the voxel front. What's been keeping you busy the last couple of weeks? Obviously, Cavalier's CD's back for another year.
I got the blue Cavalier back on the road, and there's a YouTube video series on that. There isn't the video yet where it does the Johnny Groats to Land's End run, which I did over the festive season, and that went really well. The car didn't give me any problems apart from it's got a short circuit occasionally on the front side lights, and I don't know why. So I've got it was blowing the fuse to both sides of the lights. So I've cut the wires for the rear lights and wired them in via the tow bar direct to the battery, which works, but you've just got to go and pop the bonnet every time you start the car to get the back lights working. But apart from that,
bit of extra drama on your run.
Yeah, we did 1,700 miles in 48 hours, and it's since done well over 2,000 miles. So needs a little bit of a shakedown now, but it's been brilliant. I can't knock it. I'm actually going to go back to John O'Groats with my dad, who's 72 and confessed that he's never been. So we're going to go up there with my brother-in-law and my nephew to go and shoot all the cinematic and B-roll footage for that. Then I'll have to go back to Land's End as well on an adventure to go and shoot all that, because I was just like down there and back up, and it went a lot better than I expected it to the point where I did time it, and I can't publicly, you know what the time was, and I can't publicly release it.
It was very impressive because
it would incriminate myself. I honestly didn't think you'd be able to do that in such an old car. I probably hold a record of some sort for that, although we can't verify that. But
we can't do a podcast from prison, can we? So I think we're going to have to...
The car was phenomenal, though. It's to the point where I think the long gearing, and it makes all the difference with the long F16 gearbox. And now it's back on the road. It's kind of the first one I'm taking. I've got the Insignia, because we were talking about Insignias before we started the recording. I've got the Vectra and the Omega as well, which are both MOT'd. And I'm thinking I might sell the Omega because of the price of petrol.
Oh, really?
Price of petrol, it's 2 gallons a journey worse off than the Cavalier or the Vectra. And I've got a couple of people who are interested in it. It's only done 33,000 miles. I think it deserves to be looked after and kind of cosseted.
I think you're right.
Not kind of sitting just where I'm using it to chuck stuff in and go to the tip and everything like that. And I'm thinking, well, it's too hungry on fuel for what I'm doing. It's too short geared. So I'm thinking, well, there's people that are interested in it. I think I could sell it. And I did nearly buy a car this week, because last week I did the YouTube video where I looked at secondhand cars. On the podcast today, we're going to look at some secondhand cars, because you've got a list. I was going up to about $2,000. You're being a bit more posh and going between $2,000 and $5,000. But I was looking at various cars, and it was making me think about maybe changing something. And I looked at some more to do a video for the coming week as well, which I'll try and get done later today. And I did find a car which I phoned up and tried to buy, which was a 1.2-litre Corsa B on a Pier Edge. The guide advertised it for £595. It was a movie car company in Manchester that supplies cars to the BBC and everything. But that had sold, and I wasn't surprised. I had quite a long conversation with a guy yesterday, and he said, I could have sold that 10 times over. And I says, well, you've underpriced it. I says, that's too cheap for that car. I really didn't think he was going to have it, but I thought, well, £595. I thought the 1.2 would be horrendous, but I thought, well, it'd be great as a daily driver. And if I wanted to, I've got that Astra saloon with a 1.6 single point, so I could like spend a day bung that in it. And then it would have been all right. But it just made me really think that I suspect what I really don't want to do anymore is fall into the trap of having cars that are parked up for months and months and not being used. The brake discs grow rusty on them. It just knackers them, as I've found out to my cost. And the Omega is in danger of falling into that category. So, I think it's going to go up for sale because it's just the best thing for the car.
It's sad to see it go, but I think it is probably the right thing. You've got a few projects in the go and you've got quite a few, motorway crews, especially with the Cavalier CV back now as well. That's been a lot of work to get it back on the road. I mean, what year did you buy that?
January 2014, I bought the Cavalier CD.
And that was a solid shell, right? Then you've had
a lot more solid than I expected, because I only wanted the dashboard and the door cards out for the GSI. Kenzo decided he wanted to buy it after a while, so I'd put the SRI interior in it, sold him it, then we put the Valver in it, the XE, and then he sold it to a mate, Wardy, who blew the head gasket on it. Then I bought it back for 700 quid, rebuilt the top end of the engine, and then it's been on the road periodically since 2015 when I got it back. But when it's been on the road, it's been used hard. It was off the road for nearly a year there when it failed the MOT big time, February 2021. And then, of course, when I dug into it, the whole sides of the boot floor were rotten. The backs of the sills and the inner sills were really rotten. So I had a lot of work done to get it through the MOT. Since I've done it, it's been fantastic. It just drives so nicely. There's no vibration off the car sitting at 90 miles an hour. You can take it up over 100 and it just sits perfectly.
And as you say as well, like the Scottish winters with the amount of salt they chuck on the road. Was that a car from down south again?
Not CD? Massively down. It was from Warrington, but it had actually had a bit of welding before I'd got it. Not a lot, but it's still, I think it's the new kind of salt that they're using in Scotland. It's just wet stuff. And it seems to be really invasive. It really corrodes the bodywork badly. So I've now like gravitexed it, and I'm going to hit the Vectra with that. The GSI is going to need it as well, which I need to I need to get on with next. I've got the Vectra C estate sitting there as well, and I'm close to getting that to running. I should hopefully get it done this weekend.
Does that mean you've got your Tech 2 clone sorted now?
My Tech 2 is working. It will. Now the story with that is I had to get a new ECU for it because it had bent pins. The ECU has got no program on it now, so I need to reprogram it with the car, which means I needed a Tech 2 to do it. So I bought one, which is a Chinese clone version, but it's just like the real thing. I got a guy to set it up for me that sells the diagnostic stuff, which I'm glad I did, because I wouldn't have been able to do it otherwise. So it's come preloaded with an Opel Vauxhall card and a Saab card, and he's put all the cracked TIS stuff onto my old laptop. But because it's Windows 7, it's super slow.
Those clones as well now, because I've just been able to see a mate who's left the corporate world, and he's basically doing his own classic car business and just general business for modern more supercars and everything, basically. And he's actually managed to get quite a few clones, and he can pretty much deal with like 90% of stuff now, which is amazing. So he's got loads of different sort of software programs and hardware things, but it just shows if you persevere, you can probably get. I mean, your Tech 2, have you tried it yet? Is it good?
Yep. I've deleted a code out the Vectra B, and I've had it plugged into the Vectra C, and I did manage to download the information from the car, but that then needs to be fed back into the laptop from the Tech 2.
Right.
And with this being like 90s technology, it's got like this modem cable with a weird end on it. It's not just USB. So it didn't fit into my laptop. So I had to go and I phoned them up. I said, this doesn't have it. He says, right, what you need is to order this cable off eBay. So I've ordered it and it's got this funny end on it. So connect them together, then it goes into the laptop. But the disc with the drivers on it came and it was broken. So I had to go online and it took ages for it to download the drivers for it. Now it works. So when I go back out there, plug it in, it should be able to download the information from the car and then re-upload whatever it is from TIS into the Tech 2. So it gives the car its identity back and then it will start, which means I'll have another car on the road for the time being, which will be useful. So I won't probably run that one for too long. I'll need to get that up for sale, but it would be nice to have it on the road and running properly, because although it was misfiring the whole time I had it, it was actually really, it is a a Vectra C Elite Nav with six-speed manual is a lovely car to drive. So that's to get, that's to come back on the road and go as well. So I think the two big estates are going to go. I may look into getting another estate of some sort.
Oh yeah.
I don't know. Well, I don't know. It depends what comes up, really. Depends what's out there.
I've been looking at Insignia Sports Tourers actually, which I think are a cracking looking estate, but they don't have the space probably that the Amiga or the Vectra has. I would say that's a sloping rear roof line, but I love a fast estate.
I don't know. It doesn't matter massively. I mean, if I could get a Mark III Astra estate, like one that's got a bit of spec, like a diamond, you know, something a bit random, then I would happily have that. But it just depends what comes up at any one time.
Good champ.
You know, those two can go, and then I can get some money back in as well, because it's important not to have too much money laid out in cars, and I want stuff that can I can use, and I can produce a bit of content for once driven as well.
Definitely. So actually, you just mentioned, or you touched on buying a Corsa B, and as you put up on our Instagram page last week, the Corsa is in fact the best-selling car for the year in 2021, and that means it's the first time a Vauxhall has been the best-selling car in the UK ever, which is quite remarkable, because you know, I think there's been some pretty good products over the years, and suspect this was going to be the year Vauxhall were going to be number one.
The Cavaliers were the ones that came the closest to beating Ford. There were a couple of years.
Yeah.
There were individual months during the 80s and 90s where the Cavalier was a top-selling car, and it had finished second a few years, but it had never actually managed to beat the Escort. What you find now is that Corsas and Fiestas are so big that people that used to buy Astras now just buy them.
Absolutely.
It's good news for Vauxhall that they've managed to do that. There's some Stellantis have pulled them out the fleet market and the rental market, where they were ploughing in enormous volumes of cars with no profit margin, and then they had, you know, the cars that were coming back, they didn't have a lot of value in them, so it was like considered a toxic, unsustainable business plan, which Stellantis have taken them away from. I don't necessarily have an issue with the cars not being General Motors anymore, because General Motors aren't doing a particularly great job of things over in America.
That's very true.
But the thing that annoys me about Stellantis is that we've got no sports models, and I think that sports and prestige models are important for the rest of the range. Where's the VXR and the SRI and the GSI? We've got an Insignia GSI, which is about to be binned for an SUV, which is fair enough, because that model of car doesn't sell. The Mondeo is about to get killed off as well. People do not want large family
D-segment cars,
hatchbacks.
Yep.
They don't want that, unless it's a BMW 3 Series or an Audi A4, then they still sell. But yeah, we just don't. I'm like, where's our VXR range? You know, come on, can you not even hybrid or electric sort of based cars? You know, where's our performance division?
Maybe it's gonna come, because you know, GM were trying to turn around, you know, Vauxhall Open Europe for over 20 years, couldn't turn a profit, and then Brexit happened, and that probably would have been the time that they actually made money, but it, you know, didn't happen. And then all of a sudden, Stellantis have managed to make it work from basically the second year, and they're now making money. But you know, they've had to obviously consolidate the range and the platforms quite a lot. So if they're now making money, then hopefully they'll start to bring back, you know, the sub brands that we love.
Because I've thought about that, and I'm like, the fact that it's Stellantis and the fact that it might be Peugeot Citroën-based vehicles doesn't necessarily offend me that much anyway, because the new platforms that Vauxhall were using, they're all kind of the same anyway. It's not like we're losing the red top engine or the Z20 LEH or anything. All that's gone anyway. It's all this modern technology that's going to be moving towards electrics and things, and probably hydrogen in the future. There's going to be increasingly a less role for petrol-powered cars moving forward anyway.
I've been watching
quite a lot of stuff about electrics as well on YouTube. Have you ever watched Rich Rebuilds?
I don't think I have.
He's done a lot of Tesla stuff over the years, this guy in New Hampshire in America, And yeah. he's wound Tesla up a lot over the years because he's been messing about with these cars and taking them apart and fixing them and modifying them, which Tesla are notoriously against. They don't want you messing with a product. He's since gone and built a Tesla with our LS Corvette V8 engine in it and took it to nice. SEMA, which wound people up. But he's also putting a Tesla engine in an old Corvette, like a Tesla motor. So it's and they've built, they've built like a Mini Cooper with an electric motor in it and stuff. And as that technology is going to come online as well, where you can, it's going to be possible for people to DIY electric motors on the vehicles as well. And I was like, I would have a go at that. When the technology gets affordable enough to go and do it, to buy an electric motor, maybe get some bits, maybe, you know, I don't know what you would get out of scrap Prius or something like that, but I would have a go at it with an old Vauxhall. You know, I could get a Cavalier and go and bang an electric motor on it. I would be up for that. The tricky thing's aircon and power steering and cruise control, things like that, because you don't, it's easy to put it in an old Viva or a Chevette where you don't have anything. But if you want that other stuff, so I'd be quite up for that, to be honest with you.
Well, I think I sent you a picture of, there was one of the guys in the Nova Forum who was giving it a go. I don't know if it was Tesla hardware he was using, but basically he managed to get the electric motor in, taking the engine out, all this tough stuff. And, in theory, I mean, the weight of a Nova, and if you're looking at batteries and, you know, electric motor from a Tesla, that thing will absolutely fly. If he can make that work.
Yeah. The thing is, it's the battery packs are really heavy, which cuts down your range. But these electric motors have got phenomenal power in them. And as time goes, I mean, obviously you can get an e-Corsa now and you can get loads of other full electric cars from the mainstream manufacturers. And as time rolls on a few years and things like that, these will get smashed and things will get written off and won't be able to go back on the road. So people will be able to get a hold of them and strip the electrics out of them. And they're actually very simple compared to a lot of modern engines because they don't have emissions equipment on them. It's just an electric motor.
And I think imagine going to Santa Pod in a few years when it's just like silence and there's cars doing like 10-second quarter of miles and they're just like normal family cars. It's going to be nuts.
It is. I'm not adverse to it. I think it's all right to be interested and like both. I've never driven an electric car or anything like that. But I'm hoping that as the channel continues to grow, that I might be able to get in with Vauxhall and they might be like, say, be kind enough to let me have one to go and test it.
Absolutely. I think it's still a phenomenal achievement that the course is number one this year. How many did it say? It was about 40,000 last year.
Yeah, it did well. Yeah, it's appealing, and that's the new model as well, which is based on the Peugeot 208 platform, which is rolled out to loads and loads of different cars. There's a full electric one. There's not any performance petrol ones. So I would imagine that what we're going to be looking at, if they do performance models, is they're going to be electric or hybrid.
Yeah,
you're not going to see a pure petrol one, as that would be seen as a retrograde step.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right. Like, but those numbers, I mean, compared to the 90s, right? I mean, the Cavalier would have been number one every year if we'd looked at the last 5-10 years.
I think you brought up some figures from 1992, and I think the top selling car, interestingly, that year was the Escort, which was always a top seller. And the Escort in 1992, that was the J&K Ridge, was garbage. That was one of the worst cars that you could buy in that segment. There were far better alternate options that you could have gone for. And it was still by far and away the best seller. 140,000 it sold, I think?
121,140 with the Cavalier, 108,808.
That's just phenomenal. That shows you that's why Cavaliers retain the popularity and interest in them that they've got today, because the 108,000 they sold
in 1 year. It's mad.
It's over 2,000. They were selling over 2,000 a week. You know, that's just insane. Insane
nuts,
numbers.
That is nuts. But yeah, I mean, the Corsa B, going back to the car that you tried to buy, I think it's now starting to be appreciated a bit more, especially as you say, you know, the more modern cars are getting bigger, heavier. I suppose at the time, and I was probably one of these people, I was like, well, it's a little bit heavier than a Nova, and it doesn't quite look, you know, doesn't have sort of the motorsport box arches and all this type of stuff. But actually, you know, if I could rewind the clock, I only bought a Corsa GSI, I think it'd done like 60,000 miles. This was like 10, 12 years ago. 600 quid, you know, it was in the launch colour. It sort of must have been like an L Reg, I think. Yeah, and in that car now, if it had been a fairly good nick car, would be worth a huge amount more money.
Worth a fortune as well. And that 1.6 engine, it was famously restricted by Vauxhall. That one, the C16XE, and the X16XE that came after that. That engine, when they first had it out, was making like 140 horsepower. It was nearly as powerful as the 2-litre C20XE. Yeah. So they had to go and fit that restrictive and like manifold on it to bring it down to 109 horsepower. And all you need to do is buy, like Lexmall did them, and there was another company
that's that right.
did them as well. Can't remember the name. You put the manifold on it, bang, 140 horsepower off the bat.
Yeah, pretty good.
That also accounts for the latest 1.6 16 valve, which ran right through the Mark III Astra, and it was even in the Vectra B as well.
Cracking engine, absolutely cracking engine. Do you remember the sort of launch they did with that, with Naomi Campbell and Kate Moss?
I put a couple of the screenshots of the supermodel things in the video that I put up on Saturday. That had a whole variety of supermodels, Helena Christensen and all that, like that, posing with a Corsa, and it was a massive success, even though the car didn't handle particularly well, or like the 1.2 was notably gutless at the launch, 45 horsepower thing. But nobody, you know, people didn't mind too much about that. I put a turbo diesel one up last week as well, which garnered quite a lot of interest, and I would contemplate if I could get one for the right price, even a 5-door. I'd quite happily have one of them, just even for more for the sort of sleeper aspect. I'm going to keep an eye on them, because if I get rid of the two bigger cars, I might get one smaller car, and you know, I might not get an estate or something. I don't necessarily need one. I'll keep an open mind to whatever comes
didn't
up.
Didn't they, who do they have advertised the Corsa CDX as well? Was it Ruby? Just the full leather interior, well, optional leather interior in the Corsa B.
Yeah, there was one for sale on eBay, a 1.2 automatic 16 valve with aircon.
Really?
Yeah, that was on eBay last week.
That's a rare car, isn't it? Yeah, it was Ruby Wax. I'm sure it was Ruby Wax who advertised that car. I'm going to have to go and YouTube it now and find out.
I'd like a CD. Yeah, like a CDX. Anything 90s with aircon in it, I'm quite into that. You know, that's,
yeah.
Fascinates me.
Rarest Corsa B ever. What do you reckon that convertible did?
Probably
like at a climb. Remember, it had a climbing frame on the back. Basically, it was awful. It was not a well done car at all. But I reckon that's properly rare. I'll have to send you a few. Do you remember that or not?
Vaguely, I did. I not have like a back on it that was like you stuck on with studs or something like that. It was
probably
weird convertible thing.
Like a huge afterthought. There you go. I don't think you'll be able to see it on the camera. There we go.
Yeah, we can.
Look at that.
Yeah.
Horrendous.
Can't be many of them going about, you know.
That's sort of the thing. If you asked me to make that into a convertible, that's probably what I would have come up with, to be fair. Just weld some bits in the back, you'll be fine.
That's me. But anyway, what we've done is, because I went and did the video last week looking at cars up to £2,000, and I've got another few selection of them, which I'm not going to do here because we're going to do your cars. But you've been looking at cars between £2,000 and £5,000, potential used buys in the land of Vauxhall. So what have you got?
Absolutely. So first off is a car which I think is forgotten in the performance Vauxhall world. I've got a 2005 Vectra 3.2 V6 GSI hatchback. Now, compared to obviously Vectra B, it didn't really look that exciting at all. In fact, it was quite hard to pick it out versus the SRI, so it was fairly restrained.
It's hard to pick it out against any of them, really. You literally only got dark headlights and a very slightly different shaped bumper. They just made no effort at all with the styling on that car when it came out, and as a result it just kind of sailed right under the radar until the VXR came out, and then that completely overshadowed it as well.
I mean, this is up for 2995, this car here, 97,000 miles, fairly straight. I think it's got, yeah, it's got full Vauxhall service history as well.
That makes a difference. Yeah, because
huge, yeah.
A lot of them can be quite miley and they've been run into the ground as well. People don't keep the maintenance up on them all that well. But obviously, being a GSI, it's got 3.2, which is 225 horsepower in them, is it?
Yeah, it was. It was pretty high, quite, yeah. Yeah,
fair bit, you know, that's gonna shift that. They're only five-speed manuals in them. The six-speed hadn't come in yet, which I think, I'm not sure there's much of a difference between the five and the six-speed, really.
No, I don't. And actually, probably the best publicity from this car was when that policeman got caught doing 159 miles an hour and ended up having to go to court. And basically, he was like, well, I was just testing the car, you know, high-speed testing. So I think he got away with it, actually, as well. But yeah, he was
good.
159 miles an hour. Cruising around in his Vectra GSI, which I think was over the top speed that Vauxhall quoted as well. So Vauxhall was probably pretty happy with that.
I do like that. It's a car I would consider. It's just such a sleeper as well, because their advantage is they made no effort with the styling. There's not even a boot spoiler on the thing. So it looks completely, that would catch a lot of people out, and it would have done back in the day. Still, a quick car now. Yes, I like that. Possibly going to appreciate in value as well.
I can imagine
some of these cars bottom out soon.
Absolutely, I can imagine quite a few getting scrapped over the years as well, and you know it'll probably end up being a really rare car. In fact, actually, my uncle had one as a demonstrator, and I must have been quite young at the time, but I drove it to Brands Hatch to watch the BTCC with him, and had a really short first gear, but on the motorway, it just carried on pulling and pulling. Probably needed an exhaust on it. I felt it was a bit too quiet for, you know, a GSI B6. But yeah, load of car for the money. That one's 2995, full Vauxhall service history. Can't really.
I think it's worth it for it's a little bit more than you'll find some of them for. A couple of them popped up in the last week or so when I was looking, but they were rough. And if you're going to buy one for 1500 quid, you could spend another 1500 on it and it still won't be anywhere near as nice as that one.
Yeah. Yeah. So strangely enough, I seem to have a bit of a police thing going on here at the moment. But the next car I picked was the Vauxhall Insignia 2.8 V6 four-wheel drive. But this is actually an ex-police car.
That's a saloon as well.
It's a saloon, which I think looks absolutely fantastic in the Insignia. I think they look brilliant. But it's also got the big Brembo brakes, which you get from the GSI as well. Sorry, the VXR. Obviously, it's done a bit of mileage, but you know it's going to have, you know, full Vauxhall service history. And the Brembo brakes, interestingly, fitted by, you know, the police. So, yeah, bit of an interesting one, that. And of course, you can remap it.
That's a lot of car for the money. Most of the performance, 260 horsepower. It'd be interesting to see that'll be what it's listed as. It'd be interesting to see what it is on a rolling road. I suspect it might not be 260 horsepower, but it looks, it's like steel grey saloon, and it's got absolutely nothing to indicate it's anything other than a diesel 140 horsepower Insignia. Yeah, that's $3,500. That's a phenomenal amount of motor for the money. 101,000 miles, so it's not intergalactic. Obviously, the concern with those is the Haldex four-wheel drive system, isn't it? That's got a habit or a potential to grenade itself. But if it's been in the police, then and it's been a surveillance vehicle, then you would hope that it's perhaps not been banging up over curbs and things in Reading like they were on Road Wars.
You'd hope so. I mean, that four-wheel drive system is always... sounds like you're about to make a phone call. that was... It's the same... system that's on the Focus RS as well, isn't it? Or some different calibration and stuff. But I remember driving I think I did a review for Total Vauxhall back in the day, and that was the 4x4 version SRI. And actually, when you pushed on, I thought they were pretty good cars. And
I had the VXR in 2009 when the Insignia VXR first came out. I had one for a week and I had it up in Scotland, and I ran it along. I did some really good driving on roads in Scotland, and it was, it stuck to the road like glue. It was a real kind of potential license loser. And with a four-wheel drive as well, it wasn't adverse to sending power to the back wheels. If you were to go into a roundabout and sling it and put the foot down, it would lose the power at the front and send it to the back. So the back would step out on it quite impressively.
Sounds like you had a few interesting moments.
Yeah, well, the first couple of times it did it when you weren't expecting it to, it was quite scary. A $3,500 for that, a 2011 Insignia 2.8 V6 Turbo Police Special. Yeah. Nice. Now, see, this is the thing. If I went and sold the Omega and sold that other Vectra things, then I would have a slush fund of money to go and get things. But at the moment, I don't. I'm skint, so, you know.
There you go. Well, getting those other cars sold, then potentially that could... That could be interesting. But I mean, as you can see from the picture, it's in a garage well. And it's just had a full ceramic coat and full valet. So it's obviously been pretty well looked after post-police as well. So actually, the more I'm talking about it, the more I want to give quite a call. And actually,
well, why don't you buy it and I'll go and get it and look after it for you?
It's not a bad idea. It's quite tempting, isn't it? But I thought I'd go for this because, as you know, the BXRs are coming down in price quite a bit, and
that would be
it's not quite within budget of the $5,000 budget that we've set for this. I think I saw the cheapest one for like $5,995, but you know, I think you've got 90% of the car there, and you've got the sleeper element as well, which I think is pretty cool.
Yeah, it looks great. That'd be great for terrorizing people with big Audis, that, you know, when they just can't shift this Insignia from their mirror and that's...
Yeah, that's not even a BXR. What's going on? So, a couple more for you. I have gone for... Now, this is a bit of a debate as to whether or not this is worth this. And, you know, every week prices seem to change. But this is a Mark III... Cavalier SRI, but with a Saab turbo, so the B204 engine in it. Now, you know, the argument is that it's lost its originality, and so it's also running, put some pictures up, but it's running Cavalier turbo, Calibra turbo wheels on it. Other than that, it looks fairly standard. It's quite a low car. The interior looks fairly mint. And this is up for $5,495, so it's the top end of probably what you'd want to pay for this. But you know, the argument is it worth that? I would probably say yes now with the price of Mark III Cavaliers.
What gearbox? Yeah, because anything Cavalier SRI is going for crazy money now. There's one with no engine in it, which isn't a particularly nice example, which is up for, it was up for like 1500, it was bids on it beyond 1500 quid. Which was just basically a shell, and all the interior had been taken out and thrown inside it, and I was like,
So Saab engines, don't know what the gearbox is.
Don't know what the gearbox is. If it's an F28 six-speed, then I would consider, maybe it depends what you want. You maybe wouldn't be able to build one for that. If you wanted to, you could easily remove the engine and go and put it back to it would have on an N reg, it would have an Ecotec in it. If you're going to retrofit it, you would go and put an XE in it and put the four stud wheels back on it, which I don't.
I think that's quite an interesting idea as well, because if you decided that actually the money was with the standard car after a few years of running around with your turbo engine in, you do exactly what you've said, and then actually maybe it would be worth the same, if not more. Who knows what Cavalier prices will do?
It wouldn't because I've got a Saab engine sitting, and I've got the ability to build them by myself, so it wouldn't be something that I would consider. But for somebody, I've got a B204 sitting. Maybe the Saab gearbox that's on it, because they go straight in. It wouldn't be something that I would spend on. But if it's somebody who's not like mechanically sort of minded or and just want a complete car, then it's potentially worth that, because you wouldn't be able to build something for that sort of money.
Yeah.
But want a good look underneath it to make sure it's all dry and check the MOT history, because you don't want something that's been getting welded up and things. But it does look clean enough from the outside of it.
Looks like they've had the arches done at some point, but the advert is not great. And you know,
it's at a garage as well.
Yeah, they're probably lost with this, aren't they? I don't know what it's about.
I don't know how they've ended up with it.
Yeah, exactly. So you know, maybe it's a gem. Maybe there's a story that's there to tell that we don't know about. But
it may be the mechanic that works there's car or something. We don't know.
Yeah. Absolutely, could be, potentially. Didn't know you had a B204 sitting there. It's interesting.
I've had it sitting for about 10 years. They were worth about 200 quid, and now they're steadily becoming worth more money. So it's got to contemplate what to do with it at some point. The right car to go and fit that in. Not in any hurry to do anything with it, but I will do it at some point.
Well, you know, feel free to blow up my 8-valve in my Nova if you want next time you drive it.
Well, the idea is Kenzo's Nova is going to be road legal in the next couple of weeks, and what we're going to do is, once it's road legal, we're going to run it down to get your Nova. And then do a bit of running about with them, and then go take yours up and give it a service and a once over, then bring it back again. So the two Novas together. It'd be interesting to compare the 2 litre against the little 1600 that we've got side by side. So that's coming up in the next couple of weeks. A bit of plenty of Nova action. Yeah.
Excellent.
Car, what's number four? An Astra VXR.
So Astra VXR.
Silver. Now,
silver, yeah. I mean, you can take your pick, right? There is so many Astra VXRs for sale out there because they were supremely popular. And I think if you just like rewind the clock to 2006, what a huge step on. I think, is it the Mark V Golf that had just come out and it had like 197 horsepower? I hadn't really moved the game on at all. The Focus ST came out. I think that was 220 PS. And this was 200. 225, and this was 237. It was just nuts at the time, I think.
I hadn't been long started in Total Vauxhall, and they provided us with one of the pre-production VXRs before they were officially on sale. What a reaction that car got. Like, people were crazy for it. Like, it stood out so much, and it made such a good noise. Like, somebody literally walked into a lamppost staring at it, and it was like, amazing, because it had these... the Astra GSI before it was nice, but it was always... It was never like top of the class. It was never, it was always like you felt like it could do more. And people always had to modify them to get them up to that standard. But the Astra VXR just came like that out of the box. You had the enormous fat Recaro seats, the big thick steering wheel in them, and the 6-speed box, and the power out of them is standard. It was just fantastic.
Phenomenal, wasn't it?
A really wild car. People complained about the torque steer and the sort of wheel scrabble, but it was to anybody that was actually used to driving old fast Vauxhalls, it wasn't an issue. And they were so massively popular, which is then you go back to like Stellantis have got a brand sitting there that would do really well if they were to bring it back, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And it was just that bit ahead of everything else when it came out. You know, if you've driven a Mark II Astra GT or anything like this, Jeremy Clarkson brought up the torque steer and he took his hand off a steering wheel on TV and he was like, oh, look, it's going to the left. I'm like, of course it's going to go to the left. You know, it's nearly 240 horsepower through the front wheels.
So this one that we're looking at here looks almost standard as well, because an issue with a lot of them is they've been customised and not always very nicely, which would dig into the desirability and the resale value for me. This one's got the 19s on it. Silver as well, which is one of probably the rarest of the colour options. It does look very original. It's got a Miltec hard boost pipes, updated recirculation valve, remapped to 2. So basically, it's as near as standard as you're going to get. 77,000 miles, full service history. Yeah. Long MOT. Yep. I like that a lot. If I was in the market for a VXR 4250.
Yeah. And you know what? You can take your pick out there. There was a few I could have gone for. But as you say, a lot of them have got big power now. And really, the smart money is going for something that's nearly standard that you can take back to standard in a few years' time when the rest of them rust or get crashed or whatever that happens to them.
It's a car that's going to, they're definitely going to appreciate in value. Especially as time goes on, when you can't, as we move towards 2030 and this supposed ban on petrol vehicles and things, when you can't get new ones anymore and things, stuff like this is going to go up in value because people are going to get it and hold on to it because there aren't going to be any more.
It was definitely
an investment at £5,000, I would say.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it was that era, wasn't it, when VXR was starting off, and it was the start of something quite exciting for the Vauxhall brand at that time. Obviously, had the Monaro and the VXR, sort of launched the VXR brand, but this was the car that really mattered, and this was the one that sold a huge amount of over the next few years. And actually, again, my uncle had one as a demonstrator, and I was lucky enough, I think it must have been 18 or 19, when it first came out. And I was like, oh, can I go down to Guildford Cruise in your car? And Pete's like, yeah, fine, off you go. So me and a couple of mates went down to Guildford Cruise, and we parked up. So it was Arden Blue Astra VXR. And we ended up parking up next to the sort of Asbo Orange that the Focus ST came. So someone else had got a brand new Focus ST, and then we pulled up with the Astra VXR. And I tell you what, it caused such a stir, because obviously there was so much about the two cars when they were coming out, and you know how much power they had for a hot hatch at the time. Obviously, those numbers are just, you know, you look at hot hatches these days, you're like 300-400 horsepower, it's mad. But at the time, it was really significant.
That's front-wheel drive as well, because back in the early 90s, they were saying 150 horsepower is too much for a front-wheel drive car.
Yeah.
And I never really got it with those journalists that were saying, oh, the car's uncontrollable, because the Astra GT 16 valve, it was a bit, they're not any use, they're not good in the wet, but in the dry, you could throw them about no problem at all. I never got the sort of, you know, the excitement and controversy over, you can't put that much power through the front wheels of a car, because meanwhile, like down at Courtney Sport, they're putting turbo engines and Novas in the mid-90s, and everybody else, all your garage home mechanics started doing all the same thing all over the country, and we're building cars with 300 horsepower and these ancient, you know, Novas and Mark II Astras and things, and they're like, no problem. And then these stupid car journalists are like, oh, it's too much. And it's like, piss off.
Yeah. Anyway, 10 years later, exactly. What's a Honda Civic these days? That's still front-wheel drive as well. I think that's well over 300 horsepower these days, I think, from memory. So,
no problem. Yeah. What about for car number five?
Well, car number five has disappeared, actually. So I had a couple here, which, but we were looking at a Vectra C 2.8 twin turbo estate. Mm. So quite like a fast estate. Mm. And that has now disappeared. But these cars, again, just look like taxis. And, you know, I think at the time they were maybe 5, 6, 7 grand more expensive to get a 2.8 turbo over a 2 litre. So that was, the original Saab engine, wasn't it? That was bought across the Vauxhall. Huge amount of power. And today there is no difference. So it's all about the condition of the car, of course. So I did have a 2.8 Elite Vectra C estate with the revised front end, so from 2005 onwards.
Give it a search, see if it's what's it on? Is it on Auto Trader or eBay?
It was an Auto Trader. It's not here now because I'm having a look now.
Give it a search. See, it might have been relisted or something.
Yeah, potentially. But you know, I thought, you know, same as your Vectra Elite as well. What a huge amount of car for the money. The only thing you've obviously got to consider is there's probably a horrendous road tax bill to come with that car now, because it's...
Yeah, that's the thing. Post-2006 cars, the last one that you can have, I think, is a 55 plate, but it dodges that super high tax rate, which sends the Vectra VXR and these 2.8 turbos, that's about £500 a year taxability things, which makes it more... Which gives you more of
things, isn't it?
It does kill them. It makes where you've got to factor it in as to how cheap you can buy the car in the first place. If you're getting it for a super cheap price, then you've just got to factor in the whole life cost of what you want to do with it. But there's one. That's a Vauxhall press car there, J3 VXL. That's looks. But you can see that's a luxury one because it's got the silver headlights in it as well, rather than the dark ones.
Yeah. They were optional 19s, I think, those wheels. Really rare wheels. Mm. We'll have to put obviously a picture up when we do this podcast. But it looked very similar to that. Didn't have the same wheels, but you know, I just thought that's if you want to move stuff around really quickly. Mm. I just thought, wow, for just over £3,000, what a fantastic sleeper that is. So that was the last car. Really, not quite as exciting as the others, but you know, if you're
definitely food for thought there. But I think I was going to do the same thing. I had the Corsa B, which sold, and I had a Vectra B, an Astra GLS, a Signum 2 litre turbo. Can't remember what else. There was maybe one other thing.
Oh, Signum's a tempting car, isn't it? Isn't that a bit of an oddball car?
Yeah, it's one that you really, it gets forgotten about. Sort of 2+2 yeah. seating arrangement with a fridge between the seats. Now, a really bizarre yeah. executive car, the heaviest depreciating car in Britain at one point.
It was indeed, good knowledge, yeah. That was, I think they looked at, was it the Renault Velsatis that was based off? Or like the idea was based off it at least. Was it the Velsatis?
Yeah, it was inspired by it, I think, that weird looking Renault.
Yeah, inspired by it. And then turns out that didn't sell any either. So mm-hmm. wasn't great. But I think it actually got a fairly reasonable review from Top Gear when they did it. I don't think Jeremy Clarkson ever drove
Clarkson,
it.
Clarkson drove it. He sat in the back and tried to drive it using mops or something like that to lock
That's
the pedals.
Right.
That was 2003. Yeah. I remember that because we watched it in the hotel at Billing. That's how I remember that episode.
Oh, really?
So rare.
Yeah, a rare moment when you can remember from Billing 2003.
Yeah. No, I actually
had a few beers, I imagine, there. Oh, did you? Okay.
I behaved at that one. We went to the Performance Vauxhall show in June and got wrecked and went out nightclubbing. at Billing 2003, I behaved myself. That was the first
Very
year
impressive.
That I went, which then went on a year, 11 consecutive Billings. I think the new event at Sidewell doesn't clash with anything, so I should be able to go to that in 2022.
Yeah.
So that'll be...
Well, if they can try and capture the magic of Billing, which was... It was just far less hectic than, I mean, it was complete polar opposite to Santa Pod, wasn't it? You know, nice leafy trees, more relaxed, huge variety of cars.
Yeah, lovely.
Be there for
atmosphere.
A few days. Hopefully that's been captured because it was a pretty awesome event.
Yeah, definitely. Cool. Well, I think that about wraps this up for this one. Thanks very much for providing your cars and all that.
No problem.
Catch up with you again in a due course. I'll go and dig some out and put some together that we can run through, and I'll have some updates relating to the fleet and things. I'm going out this afternoon to go and do some work in Kenzo's Nova to get it very close to being MOT legal. Might even be able to drive it, take it out for a bit of a test drive, perhaps.
Exciting.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Cool. Okay. Well, I'll sign off now. Cool. Thanks very much, and I'll catch you up with you again soon.
Sounds good. Cheers.
Take care. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.